Later on in the program, I will be speaking with Rob DeWalt, speaking of the arts. Right now, I'd like to welcome Abe Scherner. He is a winemaker. He's giving a lecture today at St. John's College at 3:15 in the Great Hall called Dinner with the Cyclops. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thanks so much.
So we will talk about the provocative meaning of your lecture in a moment, but let's talk about you. How did you go? You were a St. John's graduate. You got a PhD and became a St. John's tutor, working in classics and philosophy and all the different things we do up there at St. John's. And then you became a winemaker. Tell us about that.
It's the danger of the sabbatical.
Yeah, right.
I left St. John's on a sabbatical in 1998 with the plan of learning a little bit about grape growing and its relationship to winemaking, with every intention of returning to the college. And I was completely sucked in by the world of grape growing and winemaking.
What sucked you in?
Well, that's such a good question. There were many things involved, not just the attractions of the profession, but it was such a different way of living and working. And it's not that I had become tired of what I was doing at St. John's, but it was a profound change, and maybe the biggest one was that I had lived in a world of words and a world of thoughts where it was really hard to say what was, in the end, something like right and wrong. And that was a world that I was very, very comfortable in. And as soon as I started working in grape growing and winemaking, I was plunged into a very different world where either a fermentation had started or it hadn't, and there wasn't anything to discuss, or either the plants were healthy or they were not. And there were many, many interesting practical questions about what made the plants healthy. You had to get them right. You couldn't just talk about them. There was something really attractive about that.
And there's also a whole set of life processes going on when you're making wine that have to do with fermentation and bacteria and yeast and growing grapes and the sun and everything else that goes into it that they, again, it's not words. You can't talk to them about it.
It's true, and that's what I spend most of my time thinking about. There are all kinds of really interesting questions about what make the best wines and what makes one wine particularly flavorful, successful, enjoyable. But that's not what I spend my time thinking about. Those things, to some degree, take care of themselves. I spend my time thinking about what you might call biology.
Right. So, and these are things that, I mean, it seems like wine is such an art form that's been cultivated over so many millennia, I guess, and all the traditions and all the rights and wrongs of how you do it have been handed down, but there's no one right way.
That is for sure true, and I think that as an outsider, I had a sense of that, not as a winemaker at all, but as an aficionado of wine and somebody who read a lot about winemaking, I had a sense there were many, many different ways to make wine. It never occurred to me when I was doing that reading that I was going to get to test some or many of them out. It's true that there is no single right way. There are ways that are taught in the schools that are orthodox to some degree, and then there are ways that are very traditional. Sometimes those two meet, sometimes they oppose each other. It's been really interesting to me to get to know both of them.
What are some examples of what you're saying?
Maybe the prime example is fundamental to the biology of winemaking, and that is the use of cultured yeast. In conventional orthodox winemaking that's taught in schools, the first step in the process of fermentation is to inoculate either your grapes or the juice, depending on what you're making, whether it's white wine or red wine, to inoculate those with a cultured yeast that has been developed in a laboratory somewhere. That's a relatively new way to make wine. Pasteur only discovered the role of yeast in fermentation about 150 years ago. The culturing of yeast became only common, I would say, sometime after World War II, but became widespread only in the 60s or 70s. The traditional way to make wine is to allow a certain form of spoilage to take place spontaneously, namely the consumption of sugar by yeast that just can happen in the open air.
Very interesting. Now, where do you stand? Do you try everything, or do you have a particular mode that you've developed of doing things, or a particular tradition in which you work?
In a certain sense, the answer is yes to everything that you asked. I try almost everything. I'm really committed to learning as much as possible and not shutting down any avenues in advance. But on the other hand, there are certain ways of working that are definitely more attractive to me than others. And the ways that are most attractive to me tend to be the ways that are most traditional, that involve the least intervention on the part of the winemaker, where you're working with things that to a high degree are out of your control instead of trying to maximize what's under your control. So what that means is I almost never buy yeast. I certainly don't do it unless I have some kind of disaster that has to be attacked with commercial yeast. All of my fermentations without catastrophe or disaster are natural.
Right, right. We're talking to winemaker Abe Scherner. So wine seems to have its own language, and when you read about wine, which I haven't done a lot of, but in preparation for talking to you, I was reading various articles, and I mean, people anthropomorphize wine. They talk about a particular wine as intellectual or loud or subtle or whatever, and there is a language, and I don't know how much of it is genuinely descriptive and how much of it is baloney, spumoni, you know? What's your take on that? What's going on?
So, without trying to defend this way of speaking about wine, but maybe only explain it a little, it seems to me not so different from the way that we talk about music.
And exactly.
I think there's a good reason for that. I think it's really difficult to talk about the things that on the one hand have a degree of intellectual content, but on the other hand come in through our senses and that we take pleasure in through our senses. There's no taking pleasure in wine or music without sensation. I think that for many reasons we might be more inclined to ascribe structure and other things that could be analyzed to music than we could to wine. But think about the way a well-crafted meal has a structure, even the way that a well-crafted single dish has a structure that unfolds in time. Wine has the same possibilities, so invites the same way of speaking. It's also true that things get ridiculous in the way that people describe wines.
Oh, my friend and I used to have, we had a parlor game of, you know, we read a label once of a wine bottle that said something like, fruity yet flinty. And so we started the structure this yet that. So it was sort of like Nat King Cole yet James Brown. I mean, is that when you read what somebody says about a wine and then you drink it, do you see what they're saying?
No, you never see what they're saying. I'm not saying it's impossible, but I know this from conversations with people rather than so much from reading. It's very much like talking about one's dreams. It's very, very hard to communicate the private experience that you have had. And the only way that you can do it is by spending a certain amount of time with your interlocutor and discussing the same wines that you've consumed, I would say, best of all, if you're consuming it at the same time in the same place. If you don't have that kind of conversation with the wine in front of you, it's so hard to know what the other person is talking about. You and I can both say flinty, but the likelihood the first time that each of us says it to the other that we mean the same thing, or that I can figure out what you tasted in the wine that caused you to say that, that likelihood is small.
Right. Now, has your profession as winemaker affected your enjoyment of wine?
That's a really good question, and it's a question that reminds me of questions that we asked all of the time in the music tutorial at St. John's, where there was a question, I think, in the back of everybody's mind every day, whether the work that we were doing in the music tutorial was in any way inhibiting our ability to enjoy the music. And I think that's because with things like music, food, wine, most of us have an inclination to think that the innocent, spontaneous reaction and interaction with the music, the wine, the food, that there's something better about that than a reaction that's mediated through analysis or some kind of intellectual activity. Nonetheless,
we're having a smoothie machine in the background. Pay no attention, ladies and gentlemen.
Nonetheless, I think that even though I know so much more about making wine and so much more about all of the wines that are being made around the world, I don't think it's really affected my ability to enjoy the wines I drink, not in any negative way.
Part of what I was thinking about is when you, for example, sommeliers who have to taste wine for a living, they don't swallow it. And so this experience of putting it in your mouth but not swallowing it, I guess you get used to it, but it seems like such a non-enjoyable way of tasting.
It's so funny. I would say, we call that spitting. I would say spitting is the most important part of my life. It would be impossible for me to do what I do without spitting. I spend so much time spitting. It's really important that the winery floor be concrete and that it slopes a very, very small degree to a drain. You have to spit all of the time.
Do sommeliers have, or winemakers have spittoons?
Yeah, we tend to carry spittoons around the winery with us. And sommeliers, if you sit down with a sommelier to taste wine with them in some kind of professional context, perhaps you want to sell them your wine, the first thing that anybody does is to put down a spittoon in front of you, and then come the wine glasses. And it's a sign that you're working with somebody who's not a professional, who might be a really enthusiastic amateur, but not a professional if there's no spittoon on the table.
Very interesting. But you eventually drink wine.
Oh, there's no question. I mean, one of the things I'm thinking hard about for this lecture is what role alcohol and intoxication plays in the enjoyment of wine. It's an obvious question, but I think one that we tend to shy away from thinking about. So, yeah, there's all of the tasting that involves spitting is only for the sake of the eventual tasting that doesn't involve spitting.
We're talking to winemaker Abe Scherner. So you started making wine not only in California, but in Red Hook, Brooklyn. Why there?
I should also confess that I've got a project in France, and the project in France is tied more intimately to St. John's than the Red Hook one is. It was founded with Jeff Bishop, who was the vice president of the two colleges for about 10 years. But why Red Hook? There is so much to learn. There's so much to learn and so much that interests me. In California, there's both a certain way of working and a certain kind of raw material that is at one's disposal, namely the fruit that can grow only in California. The fruit that can grow in New York is completely different. And so I would say there was an attraction to working with this fruit and learning what it would be like to make wine from it. But there was also a really different kind of attraction that was the neighborhood that we created the winery in, Red Hook in Brooklyn, is an absolutely amazing neighborhood. It's a neighborhood that is, in some ways, barely changed since the Civil War. The subway was never run out there, and so it's kept this neighborhood, which is really close to the rest of New York, in seclusion to some degree. And there's a lot of really interesting industrial, and interesting artisanal work that's being done there, all in proximity to the water. And when a friend of mine and I spent a little bit of time there and looked at what was being done, we asked ourselves what we could do that might be as interesting as what other people were already doing, and we decided our contribution would be making wine.
Now, you were hit pretty hard during the hurricane.
Devastated. It's not clear, I shouldn't say, I was going to say it's not clear that the winery will be rebuilt. There's no doubt we will rebuild the winery, but it's going to be a very difficult and expensive process. What's kind of interesting is it doesn't seem that the wines were damaged. It's part of the amazing thing about wine. To some degree, I feel like wine is some entity in the universe that's protected by the gods. There's so much that makes it go right rather than makes it go wrong. And as far as we can tell so far, we saved almost all of the wine in the Brooklyn winery. We're still not positive about this because there are really important tests to be done by the EPA to see if there's microscopic or chemical contamination of the wines that will make them undrinkable. But as far as normal winemaking goes, in spite of not having power for 10 days, we saved the wines. But the physical structure of the winery is absolutely devastated. We built a tasting room there, and the tasting room was destroyed and has to be rebuilt from the ground up.
Wow. Now, are you making a reasonable living doing this?
Not yet, but it's an absolutely wonderful way to live. The last thing that I've had to learn about what I'm doing is how to be a businessman.
Right. I mean, that's part of, along with the biology, that's part of the kind of reality of this whole business.
Absolutely. And I was cushioned from that reality. I started at the tail end of the dot-com boom, and there was so much money to be made in Northern California at that time without having any kind of professional requirements. A bonus from the dot-com boom allowed me to bottle my first wines, and it took me a long time to realize that the endeavor that I was engaged in was a really expensive one with a high degree of capital requirement, and that the payoff for making wine was a long way down the road. But I had so much fun for the first few years that I didn't look at anything like that.
Is winemaking a communal process to some extent? Do you have to work with a partner who's in the same headspace as you?
It's a very good question. It is not a communal process. In fact, there are many solitary winemakers. One of the paradigms of winemaking is the person who works alone, in the fields, who works alone in his or her cellar. It's possible to do a vast amount by oneself. It's not the way that I like to work. I would like to work very much with colleagues. I like to check my own thinking against their thinking. I like both the physical collaboration and the intellectual collaboration. So I have never really worked in that mode. It's also some extension of what I used to do at St. John's. I feel like it's important to have students. I was taken on by a great teacher, and that's the only reason that I know how to make wine at all. So I've tried to be a teacher every year and always take on interns. It's also very interesting to me that the whole profession is very collegial. There's some people who are very private about their knowledge and their understanding, but for the most part, all of us work together, even if we work at individual institutions, and share the knowledge that we have.
That's fascinating. I hadn't really thought about it, but I would have thought it was a more competitive field.
It's so interesting. From my very first looks at the profession from the outside, my sense was, in spite of the fact that there has to be economic competition between the wineries, at a level of professional accomplishment, my sense is almost all of us are trying to raise what all of us are doing together.
I imagine there's a lot of opinionated people in that field.
Yeah, I'm not sure that any more opinionated than others. I mean, maybe it's just been my good fortune to spend time with people who are very open-minded. So my sense is the people that I have worked with, both in the United States and in Europe, more open-minded than opinionated in any way that suggests being shut off.
Very interesting. Now, you are giving a talk today at 3:15 in the Great Hall at St. John's, and it is called Dinner with the Cyclops. What are you talking about?
Well, I'm talking about the Odyssey. It's so funny. At St. John's, it seems impossible to escape Homer, and I must say I haven't even had that thought for 10 or 12 years. I left the college in 1998, and I have been so engrossed in winemaking, and more so every year, that my thoughts have turned over the course of time less and less back to St. John's and less to the things that I used to think about at St. John's. The dean, Walter Sterling, who's a really old friend of mine, he asked me to do this lecture perhaps as much as a month ago, and he suggested a time towards the end of my harvest period. I was hesitant, but I thought that by the end of November, the beginning of December, that I would have had enough time since the end of harvest to prepare a lecture. And in fact, I was quite wrong. I started preparing the lecture about 2 days ago because I've been so busy with my winemaking, both in New York and in California. The return to Homer was inevitable. I knew from the beginning that I wanted to write about the scene in the first third of the Odyssey, where Odysseus and some of his companions are trapped in the cave of the Cyclops. And one of the reasons that I wanted to write about that was because the cave of the Cyclops paints an interesting biological picture. The Cyclops has cheese, but he doesn't have wine. He lives on an island where there are grapevines, but he doesn't have wine. And it's to some degree his inexperience with wine, and maybe I think some other reasons too, that Odysseus can completely beguile him with wine that Odysseus brings into the cave from outside. So that's the center of what I'm talking about, and that's the origin of the title. But I'm using this as I don't want to say a springboard, but maybe a way for me to bring my thinking about microbes, about fermentation, and these things I've learned about since St. John's, to bring that back, not necessarily to the college, but to bring it back to my old way of thinking.
So has St. John's affected the way you make wine at all?
Well, I can't say in some direct way that it has, but I can say without any hesitation that I would not be making wine if it were not for St. John's. It was both my St. John's education and my continuing education as a tutor that has allowed me to do this. And I mean that in a couple ways. I mean, partly that we are taught, not just by attitude, but also by practice, not to be afraid of something like professional barriers, or we're taught that one doesn't have to have an advanced degree in mathematics to be able to look at Lobachevsky. That's a very, very important thing, and I couldn't have tackled some of the just only slightly difficult scientific questions. But I also wouldn't have had the courage just to jump in the middle of my life to a profession that many people spend 6 or 8 years training themselves for.
I love that. St. John's gives you a kind of courage and freedom to do whatever you want.
There's absolutely no question about that.
Abe Scherner is a winemaker. He's giving a lecture today at 3:15 in the Great Hall at St. John's College right here in Santa Fe. And to find out more, you can go to scoliumwines.com, and I'll link to that on my website, santafe.radiocafe.org, but Scolium is S-C-H-O-L-I-U-M, scoliumwines.com. Abe Scherner, thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
What a pleasure.
And I'd like now to welcome Rob DeWalt. He is with the Pasatiempo Friday Arts Magazine in Santa Fe, New Mexico. He's with us often, speaking of the arts. Bienvenido.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
Hanging in there. How about you?
Oh, you know, holly jolly.
Totally. Are you sick of Christmas carols yet? It's still November.
You know, I've managed to stay out of stores that play them. So far, so good. I'm sure that will change
yeah.
in the next week or two. But for right now, I just, you know, I put certain songs in my head when I walk in a place, and then I can somehow avoid hearing.
Right, it drowns out the actual noise
yeah,
around you.
Yeah, just focus on the voices in your head and everything.
So, tonight is the Santa Fe Film Festival Gala.
That's right. It's at the History Museum, isn't it?
I think it's at the Hotel Santa Fe.
Oh, no, it is at the Hotel Santa Fe. You're right.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a screening later, I think, in the week at the History Museum.
But oh, that's probably right.
Tonight's I don't think the festival officially starts until the 6th, but tonight is the gala. It's a fundraiser for the film festival, obviously. And there's going to be food, and there's going to be a live auction and a silent auction. And I believe Ron Dadu Romanovsky is going to be there playing some
Yay.
Music, strolling around. And let's see, that's, wow, 7 to 9 p.m. tonight over there at the Hotel Santa Fe. And, you know, the Santa Fe Film Festival website can be a little bit confusing, but if you go to the santafefilmfestival.com website and then go to the schedule link,
yeah.
and then click on the event, then you can find tickets through there, or just call 988-7414. Tickets are up there, but it is a fundraiser. So
yeah, the one tonight is a fundraiser, and then next week it starts, and on Wednesday they're going to have at 5 o'clock a festival eve presentation of a film called Now Forager, a film
yes.
about love and fungi. Did you say fungi or
fungi?
Fungi.
I'm a fungi. Are you
yeah,
a fungal?
I'm a fungi too.
I know.
A fungal. And that's at 7:30 at the Coyote Cafe, and that should be fun too.
Yeah, the screening is at the screen, I believe, and then you sort of hop over to Coyote Cafe at
right,
7:30 for a three-course meal prepared by chef and owner Eric DeStefano.
No, wait. That one, sorry, I think that one's at the History Museum.
That one's at the excuse me. That one's at the History Museum at 5 p.m. on Wednesday, December 5th.
Right, and then you go to the Coyote Cafe afterwards.
Yes.
Thank you. And so Santa Fe Film Festival. I just saw a movie in preparation for the festival. I have a couple of DVDs of movies that are going to be screening there, and I saw one called Little Dancer.
Yes.
It knocked my socks off.
I didn't get to see that one. No. Is this the one about the ballerina?
Yeah.
No, I haven't seen it. But we do
very,
have it covered.
It's very, very, very good.
Yeah, we have a huge package coming out for the issue of the 7th.
Okay.
But this week we have some information on the things that we just spoke about.
Yeah, so the pasta will come out a week from today with lots of stuff in
lots
it, but
stuff.
Also there's tonight and then Wednesday and Thursday of next week. So
yeah, go to the read the pasta and go to the SantaFeFilmFestival.com website, and you can figure out schedules and everything. You can sort of plan your film viewing
exactly
around it. But you know, this fungi movie was Now Forager was. It's really well shot, and I believe that one of the creators of the film is going to be here answering questions that night, Wednesday night.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, so that'll be cool. He's actually an editor of a mycological newsletter in New York, I believe. So he knows his mushrooms quite well. So before you go out foraging, you might want to talk to him.
Yeah, really.
Unless your in-laws are coming over, and then... More power to
you. Yeah, and then all bets are off.
Yeah. Speaking of films, I have a bone to pick with you.
Oh, yeah?
I understand that you don't like Indiana Jones. No.
Ladies like and gentlemen. You know, I saw it the other day because they have that Science on Screen series with the SF, Santa Fe Institute
yes.
people are showing films at the CCA. Like, a scientist chooses a film, they show the film at the CCA, the scientist introduces it, and then they do a Q&A at the end, which is a great series. It's really a wonderful idea, and I've seen a bunch of them. And so the wonderful archaeologist George Governman had chosen Indiana Jones, or the, what's it called, Raiders of the Lost Ark, which was
yes.
the first Indiana. And I'd never seen any of the mm-hmm. Indiana Jones movies, so I rented it and dutifully looked at it. I mean, not that I expected it to be anything other than it was, but it was awful. Awful. It was just a giant comic book and a bunch of stock caricatures.
Yeah. I think it's different when you see if you're younger and you have, like, more of a sense of adventure. Like,
well,
I'm going to be an archaeologist, you know?
Yeah, that's yeah. what archaeologists do.
No, I mean, I actually, after I discovered this and we had our little online...
Yes, we had a Facebook conversation about this.
I went back and watched it on VHS, no less, and realized that it really is not Spielberg's strongest work. I believe what I called it at the time was an opera about dirt for people who don't like music. But
there's no music in it.
There isn't, exactly. It's an opera about dirt for people who don't like music.
I think it's just a giant live-action comic book.
Sure, sure thing. Awesome
and I'm not Spielberg's biggest fan. I know some people are, and that's takes all kinds.
Yeah.
Moving right along. Come have your pet photographed with Santa Claus at PetSmart starting in Santa Fe, starting this Saturday, the 1st of December, December 1st and 2nd, and Felines and Friends is reaping the benefits of that, and they are able to place homeless and abandoned cats.
Aww.
So it's December 1st and 2nd, and then the 8th and 9th, 15th and 16th, from 10 to 4 at PetSmart. So check it out. You can also go to fandfnm.org. That's Felines and Friends.
It's hard for me to go to these like PetSmart places now because we're like sort of just actively looking for a dog.
Oh, and I got a dog for you.
And, well, we don't want a puppy because I'm not around enough to take care of a puppy.
Right.
And my partner will be off skiing. The bum, all winter. So we're looking for a playmate for my other dog. So
there's you know. No shortage of adult dogs who need a loving home.
Absolutely, it's just a matter of time and getting the two of us together to go and look at a dog together is a chore.
Yeah, yeah.
But we'll get her done.
It's a nice as chores go.
It's one.
It's
of
a
the
pretty
more,
nice one.
It's one of the nicer chores.
I'm gonna be talking to some pet rescue folks on Monday on this show.
Really?
Yes.
Maybe they could hook me up.
Yeah.
Yeah,
just saying.
What do we got? Oh, you know what? It's the 24th annual Winter Spanish Market also this weekend.
Oh, right.
Yeah, it's the 1st and the 2nd of December at the Santa Fe Community Convention Center. You know, it's an offshoot of the traditional Spanish market. And there's going to be 100 artists and their work. And there's some holiday-themed stuff, but there's also some other just fairly traditional stuff. And it's from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. on Saturday and 9:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. on Sunday. And there's no charge for admission, which is fantastic. And
I went last year. It was beautiful.
Yeah, it's beautiful. I mean, I'm really interested in some of the more out of this world looking stuff that I can't afford. But there it's a great alternative to, I don't know, going and listening to. Maybe they won't have Christmas carols there. You know?
That is possible. I bet they're gonna have live music of some kind.
Yeah, I'm sure there will be. It says entertainment and refreshments, so
that would be the entertainment part.
Right. Yeah. So there's a preview I think on Friday. That would be today.
Yes.
And there are tickets are required for that, and as are reservations. And if you call 982-2226, you can get your tickets there.
And that's at the convention center.
Mm-hmm. That's at the convention center.
Awesome. High Desert Harps is giving a concert, Jumpstart Seasonal Joy, at the First Presbyterian Church, Harps with Chancel Bells. And that's from 5:30 to 6, and then inaugurate December. Shop local at Collected Works December 1st from 1 to 3 and entertain the family Christmas at the Palace of the Governors December 7th from 5:30 to 6:30. So High Desert Harps sounds like fun.
That does sound like fun. What is it? I kept getting all these emails from Santa Fe University of Art and Design is now the recipient of a new gamelan. They just replaced their 200-year-old gamelan. They sent me some beautiful pictures of it. And in cooperation with the Contemporary Music Program over there, there's a bunch of concerts coming up. And this week we have, let's see, on Saturday, December 1st at O'Shaughnessy Performance Space there on the campus of the Santa Fe University of Art and Design, SFWAD, we call it,
yes,
is the Jazz Ensemble. And then on Sunday is the Balkan Middle East Ensemble and the Gamelan Ensemble. And then, let's see, on Monday the 3rd is the African Drum Ensemble and the Rock Ensemble. And all the concerts start at 7 o'clock, and they're free.
Excellent.
Yeah, and you can call 473-6196 if you want more info on those.
Red Mountain Press will present four of its local poet authors reading from books to be published next year, and those reading will include Robin Hunt, Elizabeth Raby, Gary Worth Moody, and Susan Gardner. The event will be held in the Meme Room of the New Mexico History Museum from 3 to 5 on Sunday, the 2nd of December, and for more information, call Red Mountain Press at 983-8449.
Sweet.
Another one sounds like fun.
Another one that sounds like fun. Gosh, there's lots of classical music this weekend and the coming week. We have actually Roberto Capocchi is performing.
At Gig.
Tonight Gig Performance Space tonight at 8 o'clock, which is an awesome space. If you haven't been there, it's really fantastic. And it's a nice sort of intimate space. If you go to gigsantafe.com, I believe, you can find out about tickets and stuff.
Yep.
He's playing a selection of stuff that he's been playing at other concerts, but he's going to kind of mix it up a little bit.
Okay.
Is what I understand.
And that's tonight at 7:30, and then
yeah.
Songwriters Picking on Each Other, Volume 3, also at Gig, tomorrow at 7:30 with George Breakfast, Terry Dears, and Jono Manson, an intimate evening with gifted singer-songwriters trading songs and the stories behind them, hosted by the fabulous Jono Manson. So tonight and tomorrow at Gig.
Sweet. Have you been to the Cirque du Coulee?
No.
this is a fun event that's happening. Jenny Cooley is sort of in charge of the whole thing. And it's happening at the Lucky Bean Cafe, which is where Borders used to be in that huge gaping hole in San Bosco Center.
That's right. It's strange in there without the books.
It is. It is. Someone should just turn it into a rock venue, if you ask me. But that's just me.
There's an idea.
But there's a reception tonight from 5 to 7 p.m. The show is up through December 23rd. It's been called a pop-up group show, but they have some pretty quirky art there. Speaking of quirky, Axel Contemporary, we've got Books on Wheels. There's a sale of the Mobile Gallery's publications, an exhibit of art from the books. And let's see, the Axel Contemporary has a new book out called Landings, Birds in the Park. It's a monograph of artist Christy Hank's global site-specific installations. And there's a reception from 5 to 9 p.m. tonight. You can look for the Axel Contemporary Mobile Step Van Gallery at Baca Street Studios.
Snow Poems Exhibition and Poetry Storm, a celebration and fundraiser for Snow Poems 2013. There's going to be an exhibition, raffle, poetry reading, and book sale, and tea and cookies. And lots of poets. Arthur Z, Dana Levin, Elizabeth Jacobson, Elizabeth Lendy, Jamie Figueroa, Joan Logie, John Davis, and many, many more. Gabe Gomez. And that is Sunday, the 2nd of December from 3 to 5 at Margi Gallery and Contemporary Projects at 340 Reed Street at Guadalupe. And you can go to snowpoemsproject.com for more information.
Speaking of Baca Street, it's the 12th annual Baca Street Arts Tour also, which is probably why Axel Contemporary is going to be cruising the neighborhood. Let's see. We've got maps and details are available at Liquid Light Glass over there in the Baca Street neighborhood. It's over there by Cafe Counterculture and
right.
all that stuff.
More That's than 20 a nice artists. Little area now.
Yeah, 20 artists opening their studios and showcasing jewelry and pottery and glass and sculpture and paintings. And it continues Saturday and Sunday. So tonight it's from 5 to 9. Saturday and Sunday it's from 1 to... Let's see. Oh, yeah. So I think it's 5 to 9 on all three nights.
Oh, okay.
But 5% of the proceeds are going to benefit the Santa Fe Children's Museum, which could certainly use the help.
That's right. They had a big telethon the other day.
They did. How'd that go? Do you know?
I think it went very well.
Good.
The Madrid 30th Annual Christmas Parade and Open House is Saturday tomorrow at 4 o'clock. And the parade in Madrid includes local talent, children, adults, llamas, horses, bagpipers, sometimes dogs, and more. And one of this year's special groups is the Madrid Old Geezers Bass Drum Kazoo Marching Band. And many of these geezers were featured in the 2008 Nude Geezer Calendar. I just read what they send me, ladies and gentlemen. For more information on geezers, dogs, kazoos, and everything else, go to visitmadridnm.com.
Oh, my.
That's tomorrow.
Also tomorrow at El Zaguán at 545 Canyon Road is the annual holiday group show. There's a reception from noon to 4. And let's see, I think the show is up through December 16th, but tomorrow night there's a reading in El Zaguán by resident writers at 7 p.m., and that's going to be a good one. A lot of great talent over there at El Zaguán. You got to weave up Canyon Road and fight off the Farolito setter-uppers and go. Or is it Luminarias? I can never remember which is which.
The Farolitos are the candles in the bag.
And what are the Luminarias?
Yes. This Saturday, I got a note from Steve Paxton over at the Santa Fe University of Art and Design, and they've got all kinds of new students and faculty and returning talent. And so this Saturday at 7 o'clock at the O'Shaughnessy Performance Center is jazz ensemble and guest artists the Christian Pinnock Group and also the Balkan Mideast Ensemble and Gamelan Ensemble. Did you read all of them?
Yeah.
And the African
Just this
drum?
Week. Yeah. Uh-huh.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
No.
You got to reiterate the good
okay.
stuff.
I'm just reiterating at random.
Yeah.
Did you read Schola Cantorum?
No, I didn't. Go ahead.
Gregorian Chants of Advent and Christmas Tide, Schola Cantorum of Santa Fe and the Monks of the Monastery of Christ of the Desert, Sunday from 2 to 3 at the New Mexico History Museum.
Sweet.
That sounds sweet.
That does sound sweet. Hey, it's opening night tonight of Peter Pan. There's a story in the, not in the Pasatiempo, but in the front page of the Santa Fe New Mexican, I believe, today, about this. And they're using an actual harness.
I know.
Yeah, it's the El Dorado Children's
they're
Theater.
They're flying.
And the teen players, and they're flying around on a harness, I guess. And they're fairly darn good at it, from what I understand. That's opening night is tonight at 7:30 p.m. at the James A. Little Theater on the campus of the New Mexico School for the Deaf. Let's see. If you go to ElDoradoChildrensTheater.org, theater is spelled R-E, not E-R, .org, or call 466-4656. You can find out more info. And the show continues through December 9th. So if you go to the ElDoradoChildrensTheater.org website, I'm sure there will be a schedule.
There will be a schedule and lots of performances this weekend and even more next weekend. So it sounds like it's really worth seeing. The fellow who's directing the flying on the on these harnesses where Peter Pan and Wendy and everybody fly around the stage was in a production of Peter Pan many years ago and used those exact same harnesses.
Really?
And is the one who's showing the kids how to use them now.
Wow.
Yep.
Wow, cool. So it's opening night theater in Santa Fe. We've got the Pink Panther opening night. Santa Fe Performing Arts Teen Ensemble is presenting its take on the 63 film, and that's at the Armory for the Arts Theater. Opening night is tonight, 7 p.m., and that continues through December 9th. And we also have the opening night of Count Dracula at the Greer Garson Theater, which is, there's a story in today's Basso Tiempo on page 30 about it.
Count Dracula.
Blah.
Sunday, December 2nd at 11 in the morning in the ongoing series at Collected Works Bookstore, presented by Journey Santa Fe, Adjusting to the Light by Richard Sober. He will discuss the genesis of his book, which incorporates paintings and prose poetry, and will read selected poems from his various writings and from his latest work.
Neat.
Yep.
Neat. And then we've got the Nutcracker. Ta-da! We've got the Nutcracker, and that is, when does it start? On Saturday, I think? Let me see. Aspen Santa Fe Ballet's annual holiday season performance. There's two and 7:30 p.m. Performances at the Lenzic on Saturday. And there's also performances on Sunday, or a performance on Sunday. There's a story on page 36 in today's Basso Tiempo, and Peter Pan, and the Pink Panther, and Count Dracula continue on Saturday.
Amazing.
So it's lots of fantasy, very few Christmas carols.
Get out of your house, stop watching television,
that's
and
right.
go see actual
that's
people
right.
doing their thing.
You don't need to pitch a tent for opening night of The Hobbit yet. You can...
Did you see Breaking Dawn 2, the last of the Twilight Saga?
No. Did you?
I'm about to.
Oh, when?
I don't know. This weekend, probably,
this
or next
weekend.
Weekend.
I'm going to go see Life of Pi.
I wanted to wait until the hordes of screaming teenagers had kind of died down a little bit.
Yeah. Mostly it's just going to be girls sing it for like the 20th or 30th time.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah. Go hey. Team Jacob. Sorry.
I know why she wants to be with the vampire instead of the werewolf. The werewolf is at least warm.
I know.
You know?
I know. And
food for thought.
I know.
Anyway, New Mexico...
And he's really cheap to buy for because he doesn't wear shirts.
But, you know, it's all right that he doesn't wear shirts.
That's fine with me.
New Mexico School of the Arts Music Department Winter Showcase Concert is Thursday, the 6th of December at 6:30. And it's at the Scottish Rite Temple and will feature the talented vocal and instrumental soloist, the NMSA Choir, Instrumental Ensemble, and Orchestra. So lots of good stuff going on at the New Mexico School for the Arts Thursday of this coming week.
Sweet. A very Chaplin holiday.
Ah, yes.
Yes. Center for Contemporary Arts presents Charlie Chaplin Film Festival through January 2nd. They've got screenings of The Circus and other films. There's a screening of The Circus at 12:30 p.m. on Saturday at the CCA. And if you go to ccasantafe.org, you can find a complete schedule of films that are going to be screened. And let's see, passes are available in advance by calling the box office at 982-1338.
Did you read the New Deal lecture?
No.
The New Deal is still a good deal.
Awesome.
Catherine Flynn is giving a lecture on Monday, the 3rd of December at 2 o'clock. Reservations required at the Museum of Spanish Colonial Art, and you can go to spanishcolonial.org or call 982-2226. And you already read the other ones.
I think
heard
so.
You.
Yes, yeah, I think I did.
About Winter Market.
Hey, this is a good one. World AIDS Day is December 1st, Saturday, tomorrow. And the AIDS Memorial Quilt Panel, the few of them are going to be on view, along with HIV information, light refreshments, and I believe mobile testing for HIV at 6 p.m. at the Santa Fe Center for Spiritual Living at 505 Camino de los Marques. If you call 983-5022, you can find out more information on that.
The New Mexico, the Museum of New Mexico Press annual holiday book sale. Sale prices 40 to 90% off retail prices and out of print titles. is today from 12 to 4 and tomorrow from 10 to 3 on the second floor of the Stuart L. Udall Center for Museum Resources, which is on Museum Hill. I think it's that first building right when you turn into the driveway on your right.
Mm-hmm.
For more information, 476-1158. Cash and checks only.
Hey, I want to mention something real quick. Todd and the Fox, you know Todd Lovato, mm-hmm. the musician?
Yeah, yeah.
He's got a new album out.
Awesome.
And he actually released the album in South Korea. He was
why not?
He was invited over there, I think, in like October for some cultural festival called the Intercity Intangible Cultural Cooperation Network's World Intangible Cultural Festival.
Good heavens.
Yeah, that's a mouthful. Anyway, he and drummer Eric Sawyer went over there with their band and all their instruments and played, and they were received well. Anyway, he had a CD release party in Albuquerque, and he's having one in Santa Fe tonight at Tiny's. Along with them are going to be performing Callie Shaw, Mancy Kern and Family, and DJ Spaghetti.
DJ Spaghetti.
Don't ask.
Don't tell.
I don't know. But the album is pretty cool, and you can hear excerpts of it if you sort of Googleize Todd and the Fox. But it's a great album, and I wrote about it today in my Soundwaves column. Also tonight, 6:30 p.m. at Warehouse 21 is an awesome metal show. It's a reunion show of sorts. Bands from L.A., Colorado, and Santa Fe are going to be performing, and as most metal bands tend to do, they hybridize and crossbreed and things like that. So that's going to be a great show for anyone who wants to, you know, have their ears bleed.
Do you want to I'll have your ears bleed?
I'm going
to
be there.
I have officially, as of, I'm not sure exactly whether it was last year or 4 years ago or whatever, I have outgrown wanting to hear really loud music. I just can't do it anymore.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Get off my lawn.
I guess I should join the geezer parade.
Naked with a kazoo. But you can't be in the calendar because you're a girl.
Yeah, well, you know, you do what you can.
I know. You can be the manager.
No, we can start our own all-girl
kazoo.
Semi-clothed geezer girl parade with kazoos because we don't want to have our ears bleed.
I'm sorry, but just mentioning the kazoo makes my ear bleed.
There is that.
Yeah. There's some other films besides film festival stuff happening. Opening this week, we have, oh my goodness, Addicted to Fame, the Anna Nicole Smith film that Robert Knott gave a little review to in today's Pasta Tiempo. We have Anna Karenina opening over at Regal de Vargas. Hyde Park on Hudson, which is also a Santa Fe Film Festival selection. And that is screening at 7 p.m. Thursday, December 6th at The Screen. And there's a review by our friend Robert Kerr on page 54 in today's New Mexican. We've got, obviously, Now Foragers opening. Lots of stuff opening.
And don't forget your films as well as live theater, not only at the Santa Fe Film Festival, but as you say, our local independent theaters.
Yes.
Not to mention our local, what would you call them, dependent theaters?
Yes. There's a great romantic and fairly depressing film called Keep the Lights On. It's about a gay couple in New York based on a relationship that the director had, Ira Sachs had. And It's pretty brutal, but it's a very, very good and emotionally dense film, and it is playing at The Screen, and it opens tonight.
Excellent.
And it's not for the kids.
Not for the kids, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
Did you see Lincoln?
I haven't seen it yet.
I've heard it's good. Tony Kushner wrote the screenplay.
But isn't it a Spielberg?
It's Steven Spielberg. Yeah, so I'm ready to open my mind.
I know.
After this Raiders of the Lost Ark debacle.
Yeah, I haven't heard much about it. Apparently there's a big pit of snakes and he has a whip.
Lincoln.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So who was it who said, you can go to the theater and hope you do better than Lincoln did when he went to the theater?
Yeah.
Something like that. They said it better than I did. Anyway, you've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. Rob DeWalt is with us many Fridays speaking of the arts. He's with the Pasta Tiempo Friday Arts Magazine in the Santa Fe, New Mexican. Definitely worth picking up every Friday. And we thank you so much for what you do for us here on KSFR.
Hey, deadline for the writing contest for Pasatiempo is Monday, December 3rd. Look in today's Pasatiempo for a full-page ad on page 62 for the rules.
Fiction and nonfiction?
Fiction, nonfiction, poems. It's not all about holidays. It's about anything you want.
Excellent. Well, you've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're streaming live on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org. Thanks to Dot Foil Computer Services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can find us at facebook.com/radiocafemc. And my email is radiocafe@ksfr.org. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team. And after that, jazz, jazz, and more jazz with Helga and others, yeah. Too. Are there? I don't know if there's more DJs. Anyway, Rob DeWalt, we will see you in a couple of weeks. Thank you, and hasta la vista.
Hasta la vista. Da, 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 da.